Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Let's start off this week by announcing a few upcoming events. On April 24th and 25th, Robert Bowles will host the ISA International Martial Arts Seminar in Fort Wayne, Indiana. To find out more, visit www.shuri-ru.com. From June 11th to 15th, Neil Stoltzmark will hold the 14th Annual Warrior Gashku Seminar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This year's guest of honor is Minoru Nakazato, 10th Dan and head of Shorinru Shorinkan. Find out more at www.AuthenticAncientArts.com. From June 26th to 28th, Philip Keppel will host the 31st USKK International Karate Kobudo Championships Seminar and Tournament in Peoria, Illinois. To find out more, go to www.uskk.org. From October 2nd to 4th, also in Peoria, Illinois, Joseph Walker will host the Kagami Bikari Gashku. Go to AOK Karate on Facebook for further details. And finally, the weekend of November 6th, 7th, and 8th in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Kosho School of Karate will host Jodo and Iaido expert and the 2014 Japanese National Bato Do Champion, Sensei Chusho Fukuhara, along with Shuriken expert Ikenaga Sensei and top student of Goju Ryu's Yoshio Kuba, Miwa Kanazawa, along with several other members of the Meisui Kan Dojo in Naha, Okinawa. To find out more, email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com or call 513-510-3844. If you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, please let us know, and we'd be happy to announce them on the show. This week, I continue my discussion with our guest, Hideki Harada. Hideki is the co-owner and executive chef of Kaze, a Japanese pub and sushi bar located in the Over the Rhine neighborhood of Cincinnati, Ohio. Hideki is an experienced chef who has worked at numerous fine dining establishments in Cincinnati and abroad. From 2009 to 2011, he honed his sushi skills training in Japan. After returning to Cincinnati in 2011, he opened Kaze, along with his business partner, John Zipperstein. Kaze combines three venues into one, a contemporary dining room, a hip bar and lounge, and a year-round landscape beer garden. Kaze has become a favorite for the neighborhood as well as a destination for foodies around Cincinnati. It has also played a big part in the revitalization of the Over the Rhine district. In today's show, we get into what took Hideki to Japan and his experiences studying sushi at its source. We then compare our different experiences being a foreigner living in Japan, talk about a few run-ins with the Japanese Yakuza, and wrap up by discussing the amazing new development in Cincinnati's Over the Rhine district and how his restaurant, Kaze, has grown over the last few years. For more information on Kaze and executive chef Hideki Harada, visit the restaurant at 1400 Vine Street in Cincinnati, Ohio. Go to www.kazeotr.com, that's www.kazeotr.com, or check out Kaze OTR on Facebook. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Keep going.
We got distracted there. So yeah. you were working at Alloy,
and then again, monotonous. I was starting to drink a lot more. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that after work, I would go to the bar, and I mean, it was just becoming this boring situation where just drinking all the time. And right. I was just getting to the point where I just was like, I need to get out of sushi again. So I took another hiatus. I worked at Boca.
Okay.
In Oakley. Just to get into and away from the sushi bar and get back into the kitchen again. Mm. And that was an experience, my first experience into fine dining. And that was...
Now, Boca, there's now one downtown.
Yeah, they moved.
They moved, okay.
Yeah. Into that massive space. Beautiful.
And the company I do a lot of work for did all the woodworking in the new one. Yeah, I didn't get to draw that one, but I'm working on a couple other neat projects them in Over the Rhine. Taft's Ale House, they're converting a giant church into a beer hall. So I'm working
It's almost done, looks like.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there.
I saw the beer. What do you call that? The distill? No, the can.
The whatever those are.
Yeah, whatever. I saw it through the window. I was like, oh, that's going to be a beer house.
That's going to be cool.
So, this the Japanese witch is, nah, I don't want anything to do with
it. Vegetable, y'all. Shinpokanai.
Shinpokanai. All right. So, yeah, worked there. That was like a breath of fresh air, you know. It was like creativity to the max. It was like every day. It was all about someone getting in my face. Like, wow, it used to be when I first did sushi, it was like the guy, like, beating me down to understand why I'm doing it this way, why I'm doing this. It was like that again.
Okay. Because you're maybe on a different level, or they're expecting a different level of service or performance at this place than a Quiznos.
Uniform cuts, like, every time. The Quiznos was like, boom, you know.
Right.
It doesn't matter if cucumbers an inch thick to like a centimeter thick, you know, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But here at Boca, it was just, everything was just very militant. I mean, it was just get it to this level. And, you know, I loved it. I mean, I got the nickname iRobot.
Well, you're lucky they didn't call you Mr. Robot in Japanese.
Yeah, that would probably let you review that. Come on. Really?
They're pretty creative about it. Man.
Yeah, it was that time. It was just everything that I... We had like a 20 top party, 20 people.
Wow.
So it was coursed out. So one course was all me and one dish. They call me iRobot because every single dish always looked exactly the same.
Mm.
So it was just like, you know, everything that I did was just robotic.
Right.
They call me iRobot. And then Caprese, that song, they still do it to me. And I just want to smack them every time I hear it. But it's the Gnarls Barkley song.
Okay.
That Crazy.
Yes.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be Caprese. I make Caprese because I make Caprese all day long.
I'll see if I can get the copyright. I'm going to put this in the episode. Hopefully I won't get sued. I don't think I have enough listeners. No one will notice yet.
Yeah, right.
Let's see if it'll fly under the radar.
Yeah, so it was awesome. It was like a family, you know. It was a brand new family that walked into. And then that's where I kind of got hit the wall. I did my sushi and I did the fine dining. And then where's my path going to go from here?
Right.
Because this is the best restaurant in Cincinnati at the time, currently. And then
so you work your way up the ladder and there's nowhere else to go.
You go either, if I were to continue the way I was, if learning was more of what I wanted to do, because I like that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to go to San Francisco or New York or Chicago, somewhere bigger.
Right.
But my mother had moved. Before this, my mother had moved to Japan with my little sister to have a better life because she couldn't drive here anymore. So for the mobility of it all, riding the trains and the buses in Japan were
Yeah, because you can get anywhere. You don't need the driver's license.
Exactly. So they moved out already at that moment. It was just me and my dad. And it was our house was starting to become a mess.
It's a nice table. Thank
you. And then it was becoming it was apparent that my dad and I could not hold a house together. It was bright as day. It was just like, I come home, piles of laundry, and like, I'm doing laundry. I'm like, mom, dad, like, now.
You're your 27-year-old guy.
You know, come on, I understand you're the boss man, but you can't use me as being your laundry boy now.
Right.
So let's just pull together. But it wasn't working out. So that's when I made that decision. I was like, dad, let's jump the coop and move to Japan.
Both of you?
Both of us.
Oh, wow.
We did it. It was, you know, the housing market was terrible. Hmm. That time was just, everything was starting to fall apart. But then,
In Japan?
Here.
Oh, in here, okay.
That it was, what year is that? 2006?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was just starting to fall apart. So it wasn't like the ideal time to move and sell the house.
Right.
But we kept the house here for renovations, and we moved out there. Hmm. And that's where I hit the reset button. I just started over with sushi and just culinary, because I went to culinary school in Japan to show that piece of paper that I achieved some for my parents, you know, like, hey, here it is.
Here's the official document.
Yeah. This is an official document that I am a cook. So
did you have dual citizenship?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was easy to go over and stay. And stay. Which was one of the problems that I had when I went over was, how the hell do you not get kicked out of the country?
Extend that, you know, and it's... And there's loopholes. You can go to Japan and then go to like Korea for like a day or something, come back and extend it for another 3 months or something.
So exactly.
Like 6 months, right?
Which I did, yeah. So I did the first time I went over there to live, I got the 90-day visa.
Yeah.
Hopped out of the country, went to Taiwan for a couple weeks, and then back to Japan. I had another 90 days.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that, I had to come back to the U.S. briefly. Then back to Japan, and wound up getting a cultural studies visa, then a working visa, and then just finding different ways to do it.
Yeah.
But you got to avoid all that.
So. I had like that born identity thing going, because it was cool. Is I had two passports. So I leave the United States with my American passport. Mm-hmm. Then I get to Japan, and you had that long line of people with the declaration paperwork and all this, like, foreign passport people. But I just switched my passport to the Japanese passport, you just go right through. But I always got a question, like, where are your stamps? Like, I'd be like, okay, well, here's my, they're like, how old are you? I'm like 30, or I was like 26.
There's supposed to be a cutoff where you renounce one. How old is that? 15?
Yeah, something like that.
But you never did it.
No, I never declared.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes I think I find that with Japan. Sometimes if you don't get around to doing something, it's okay. I did that with my my Japanese ID card.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to keep it, but the last time I left Japan, they asked, "Are you coming back?" And I said, "Oh, well, no." And they're like, "Okay, we'll take." I'm like, "No, I might come back." Like, "Oh, okay." And so they left it. So I've still got it.
Let me just keep it. Why don't I? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. They wanted to confiscate it.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com. Hey everybody, Nate here. I just want to take a minute to talk about our new sponsor, the Micro Bar. The Micro Bar is an innovative, cutting-edge new type of seating that's perfect for restaurants, cafes, bars, and even the party room at home. The Micro Bar is a very versatile product, and it's perfect for residential or commercial applications. It can be used alone or grouped with other Micro Bars to create multiple seating arrangements. The Micro Bar is perfect for anywhere that seating and standing people interact, So whether you're looking for a new piece of furniture for the breakfast nook at home or you're remodeling a restaurant, go to www.microbar.net. That's www.microbar.net. Or call 513-232-9405. Thanks again for supporting our sponsors.
So what was so you went to the actual culinary school in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference between
the culinary? Yeah, because I attended culinary school. I left that part out, but I attended the Midwest Culinary Institute here for shy of 6 months. Hmm.
Was it more like the guy you were talking about throwing the sake bottles in the back of people's heads?
Was that it was a little bit more PG than that, but it was like I would have to say it's very militant. The culinary school in Japan, they didn't have janitors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the students were to clean the classrooms, bathrooms, examination rooms, all that.
That's not much different than the high schools and junior high schools there. Right. They all had, you know, cleaning teams.
Yeah, right? To clean.
Right.
I mean, that was part of just you growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's kind of why I was just like, I was so happy to do it. Mm-hmm. All the kids were like, I don't want to clean. What is this? I'm like, dude, this is cool. Like, this is actually, if you're in the industry, mm-hmm. you scrub walls, you clean pans. This is the life. Mm-hmm. So I've already been in it.
Now, these kids, maybe these other ones are maybe a little bit younger. They hadn't worked it somewhere yet.
No.
So you're the guy that had the experience, really knew what it was like.
Yeah, I was actually my team leader in my class. They put me as the leader, which is funny because I can't read Japanese very well. So.
Well, you're the leader. You tell someone else to read it out for you.
Exactly. So I sat next to
him. Dictate my notes. Well, I thought she was.
Yeah. So I had this smart kid next to me that would pass me answers for any exams. And then I would be the leading guy for this, doing the dishes as fast. Like, we always had, you know, issues, or a lot of people had issues with finishing dishes on time. Mm-hmm. So whenever it was like knife work or anything that needed to be done rapidly, I'd just be like, just give them, just bang it out. Mm. But of course they need to learn it too. I'm not trying to take their tuition money that their parents worked so hard for, you know, like to have this asshole.
Those guys, they must have loved it. It was something they didn't want to do.
You're right.
And, you know, they just
to pass it on to that guy.
Yeah.
And I just do his homework. So yeah, that was cool. I mean, it was a learning experience. It took me 3 times to take the final written exam. Mm.
Just because the reading must have been difficult.
It was not something that, it got to the point where the professor, all the teachers basically, because they knew my position, but they had to have me pass this written part. They were like, okay, we're going to give you the same, because they had 3 different types of exams. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we're going to give you the answers. Just remember A, B, C, D, and E as much as you can. Mm. So I went on, it's literally
like memorize. No, it was multiple choice.
It was multiple choice, and then there is a couple of exam parts.
When I took my tests in Japan for both like Jodo black belt, the different levels of black belt over there, and also the Iaido black belt, there's a written test involved.
Right.
And now I can speak, I can write a little bit, I can know the kanji, but at that time when I was taking these, I didn't know any. And they're essay questions. Like, you had to write, like, where did Jodo begin? Okay, Muso Gononosuke went up to such and such a temple in the year such, and so you had to write this out. So I had to memorize this, and they let me do it without the kanji.
Oh, okay.
I said, can I do it in hiragana? Yes, okay. Hiragana is okay. So I had to memorize these paragraphs in hiragana and not knowing what any of it said.
you're like drawing squiggles.
Yes. That was it.
That's impressive.
But I passed them. I got it, and I'm sure there may have been a misspelling or two, right. But it was, you know, it was all there.
That's awesome.
And I knew what it meant in English, but I had absolutely no idea what this thing in Japanese said. Yeah, so
that's basically
what you had to do.
Yeah. I mean, that is what I had to do.
Yeah.
So that was, I passed. Mm. So I got that paperwork. I got a couple of awards. So, yeah, that's that. I mean, and then they had a career center. So I had gotten a job. After staying in Japan for over a year, I got a job in Amsterdam for a hotel in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Amsterdam. So that set me off in a different direction. Mm-hmm. But it set me in a direction that I didn't like, because it was like stepping back into the United States with roles and
okay.
stuff. I was like, why did I sign up for this job? Oh, because I can speak English.
Right.
And the school pushed me basically to take this job. So and I left. Broke my contract.
Ooh.
Everything. I ran.
Okay.
Ran so far away.
So Interpol's looking for you, and you can never go back to Europe again, right? Okay.
Amsterdam is probably not a good place to go. I think I have a gym membership over there, too, that's probably still active.
I hope it was an automatic withdrawal from your checking
account. Yeah, well, that checking account's like the ABM AMRO bank. So if that's still open, they can take all that money. There's probably... Oh, that's probably like a negative balance. unless they have the overdraft protection.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. No. I left that and I came back to Japan.
Okay.
And I started working at a place called Sushi Roku in Osaka. And that was my first taste of, you know, breaking the fish down from whole to serving. It was just, that was like, I feel like the moment that I realized sushi was awesome because Japanese cuisine is great, so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but fine dining Japanese is like, again, I go back to psychology because it's memorization. It's like knowing the season, knowing you can't serve it now. Mm. Like you cannot serve this right now.
Mm.
Because it's like against the spirits of blah blah blah.
The samurai.
Yeah. It's like, what? Why? Right?
Yeah. So pickled plums would not be finished until October 17th.
You cannot serve it in September. You know? It's like that serious.
It's like the McRib at McDonald's. It's only a certain time.
Only once a year.
Right.
In mid-April.
Right.
But it's like, it's so narrow. So I was told this. It was very enlightening to me. It was like, Japanese food is so deep. The roots are so deep, but they're very narrow. There's not a lot of spreading. Like, you cannot spread your hands out to grab ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very narrow.
This is the way it's supposed to be. Right. This is the way it's always been, as long as anybody can remember, and you do not change this formula.
And every year, you go to a kikusui or a very fine dining Japanese restaurant, it's the same menu every year. And they charge like $300 a person.
Mm.
But it's like, it's regurgitated every year. It's like, because it's a seasonal thing.
Mm.
You go there every year at the same time, you're going to get the same 7-course dinner.
So but you had a little bit of trouble with that. Couldn't do it.
I mean, it was a lot of knife skills, a lot of tedious little intricate stuff.
Mm.
I cannot deal with not having the freedom of ingredients.
Mm.
That's why I love sushi.
You're an artist. You got to create.
Yeah, right? And that's what my sushi chef, my mentor, told me. He's like, that's why sushi is where it's at, because it's so deep, but it's so wide. You can do whatever you want.
Mm.
And he was like taking peanut, unsweetened peanut butter, make it marinate in soy, and marinating salmon.
Huh.
And then making nigiri with that. And another way, he was making bonito ham.
Hmm.
Making ham with bonito. Serving that sashimi, I'm like, this is awesome. This is what
yeah
the level of creativity and the freedom you can have. But he knew a lot about the Japanese history too, so he would serve certain like fish during like Obon or Oshogatsu, like the New Year's time, they would eat certain types of fish, so he would serve that.
Sure. Well, you always want your turkey during Thanksgiving.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it was like he knew the basics. Mm. But it was refreshing to me to know that you could be an uneducated, you know, creative person to do sushi. Mm. And I was like, all right, this is it. So that kind of brought that back to the States after working there a few years.
Mawari no hito ni sa wo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyo to shite imasen ka? Sports massage kenkou no specialist Medical Resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC dewa okyaku sama no karada ni awaseta massage wo okunaimasu. Mata, ATAC no sanso shitsu ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. Taisha koujo, kega no soki kaifuki ni kikimasu. Junansei wo takamero, stretching course ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC wa pro chimu, Rukyu Golden Kings, FC Rukyu, soshite Rukyu Korazan no senshu mo ryo shite masu. Zehi ichido goraiten kudasai. Open, getsuyobi kara, doyobi made, Okinawa ken, Naha shi, Oroku, 1-28 no 30. Denwa bango, 098-859-1890. Homepage mo, checko shite mite kudasai. www.sanso-atac.com. www.sanso-atac.com. Ego, Portugal go, Spain go, Nihon go ga hanaseru staff ga imasu. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
So, you know, I was curious, you know, you went to Japan, you spoke the language, you're Japanese-American, you had the dual citizenship. Did you run into any troubles? You know, don't get me wrong, if I get a couple of drinks in me, I will start complaining about things. But the vast majority of people I met, the vast, vast majority were great. Super nice, super helpful. I still remember the times when I was lost on the subway and someone comes up and goes, oh, can I help you?
Yeah.
You know, and you get that.
Yeah.
But I also got, you get the X. I remember trying to get in a taxi where the apartment I lived in Okinawa had, there were trees and planters out on the street.
Right.
So one night I went out and I saw a taxi come and I stuck my hand out. So the guy saw my hand, but he couldn't see me. So he stops, in Japan the doors of the taxis open automatically. He hits a button, opens the door, I get in. He turns around, looks, goes, oh, Gaijin! He hits the, I'm halfway in the taxi, he hits the button to close the door, punches the gas. I'm falling out of this thing, trying not to get drugged down the road. Door closes, he peels out, he's going, but he's continuing to peel out. He runs a red light. and squeals around the corner to get away from me.
This is a movie.
Wow. And in Japan, people don't cross the street. They don't walk across the street unless it's the walk sign. So this guy running a red light. I don't know what he thought I was going to do to him. Now, that's the most extreme example, but I had plenty of times where I, like, no, you know, we're not taking you in this taxi. You cannot come in this restaurant. I'm not going to say who, but I did have one martial arts instructor scream about having a gaijin in his class for 45 minutes one time.
Yeah.
Anything? God damn it, nothing.
Me? No, I got it.
Oh, you got something. Okay, good. Okay.
I got a lot of it because it was, I'm a third grade educated Japanese speaking, and I look Japanese. So
right.
It was more or less people were just like, I just explained to you something.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you? I'm like, I'm sorry. And I have to do this whole spiel every time. I have to say, I'm Japanese, but I was born in America, so my Japanese isn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that much.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, so I have to like explain this. I've probably did this, I don't know, 50 times in the whole tour in Japan. Mm-hmm. But like, it's pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
But it's pretty entertaining at the same time because I look Japanese.
Right.
So the bar.
So you can walk down the street and nobody knows the difference and people are going to talk to you or let you in.
Yeah. And then I walk into a bar and I'm like, can I have a Heineken and a Jameson? And they're like, what? A Heineken? Jameson. Oh, Heineken. Jameson. They're like, my pronunciation's too good for them to be like, know what I'm talking about.
So right.
I play that card all the time. I go to a bar, I'm like, can I get a Budweiser? Budweiser. You know, not to like, yeah, just like, because they're like, what, how do you, what, why? Or, I'm an American. I was born in America.
Right.
And I don't speak Japanese that well. Mm. So yes, it's a Heineken to me. And it's a Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, okay.
I remember having the reverse experience after I came back to the U.S. and I tried to order an Orion. And I was like, Orion, we don't have an Orion. And I'm like, no, it's an Orion. I'm looking. It's an Orion. It's an Orion. It's right there. It's on the shelf. Orion. We've got Orion.
Orion.
I'm like, that's not right at all. And I, honest to God, I didn't realize till that minute that the logo had three stars and, oh yeah, it was from like the Orion's belt after the constellation. I didn't realize until that moment. I'm like, oh yeah. Maybe that is how it's supposed
maybe
to.
Maybe it is Orion. Yeah. It's Orion. That's hilarious. Yeah, you get that. Yeah.
But it's good. It sounds like your teachers at the school looked out for you, and so everything turned out.
I think I had a lot of good support. My wife, we met from school.
Mm.
So she, I had a part-time job at a restaurant, or a Japanese fine dining, kaiseki restaurant, and she had the same part-time job there, and I was struggling so much with mannerisms and proper way to speak to guests. Like, it was me. I always had with my parents. It was like, hey, what's up? What's dinner? Come on.
The more familiar. And there's literally different words or different grammar that you need to use for that.
I had this hardest struggle with that. Mm. But my wife, and that's how it really just kind of clicked, was she would take me under her wing and just like, this is how you do it. All the other kids that were working there from the school were like, you're an idiot, dude. You're a fucking idiot. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's you say fucking, say whatever you want. It's a podcast. I don't care. I give a shit.
Yeah, he's like, you're a fucking idiot. You don't speak like that. What's wrong with you? Like, okay, I don't know if I explained this to you, but I'm American. I was born in America. The girl totally understands the problems I'm having.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's how it really, like, kind of clicked and went out for a couple drinks and kind of, like, helped me, like, understand the culture
mm-hmm.
to the service industry point of view.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, the issues that you had, it was just like really hard in the business that I was in over there. It took me a year to really grasp that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you're entering a room, sit-ish-mas, you open it.
There's certain things you have to say and certain things you have to do.
Omashimas or something like that.
Somebody walks in a restaurant, everyone has to.
What's up?
What do you want?
Yeah, right. And another thing was physical appearance. Same restaurant I was working at. I mean, this is extreme, but there are Yakuzas.
Sure.
Everywhere. Mm. You don't know what they look like, but you don't know.
Unless they have their sleeves rolled up a little bit.
Right, yeah, and then they got like some ink stains on their arm.
There was an izakaya in Okinawa that I went to with some friends, and there's a great big guy. He's as tall as I am, so probably, you know, 6 feet, six foot one. Big, burly guy. And he was the owner of this izakaya. And he also played the sanshin, which is like the Okinawan banjo. Yeah. And he had a little band, and they do the whole music and everything up there.
Oh, that's cool.
And while he's playing this, I'm looking, it's like, does that guy have a shirt on underneath his, you know, kariyushi shirt? You know, his Okinawan style shirt. And I kept looking at it, kept trying to figure it out, and I couldn't quite tell because it was dark. And then when the show was done, everybody was leaving, and he was shaking their hands and saying thank you for coming. And then he shook my hand, and I felt something weird. So I felt his fingers. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. There was no 5. So I turned his hand over, and there was no pinky.
Oh, man.
And I looked at the other hand, and there was no pinky. Oh. And then I was close enough, and you could see in his shirt, and it's like, oh, yeah, this guy was a Yakuza. He had the full tattoos, but he had left or been excommunicated or something, and he was out of the business and now running izakaya.
Wow. So that's a world that, I mean, it, you know, that'd be curious. I just want to see something like that. But like the only experience I had was working at the restaurant, and my senpai had he was pleasing the guests in front. It was just a bar counter seat, so I'm right behind him, and I didn't shave my head. I don't know. It got maybe as long as an inch.
Okay.
You know, I didn't shave it, and I didn't get it cleaned up.
Your head?
My head.
Okay.
And one guest looks at me, he's like, you better get that cut, or I'm going to look for your mom, I'm going to look for your dad, I know where your mom and dad are, or something along those lines, and I'll hurt them.
What the fuck?
Exactly. I turn my back around, like, they're right there. I turn my back. Like, in America, I would be like, you want to take this outside, bud?
Right.
Like, in my senpai saw the fresh, like, you know, counter height. Mm-hmm. My hands are down here. I'm just like, got this fist.
Yeah.
Ready to just clock this guy.
Yeah.
Because I have no...
He deserved it.
I have no sense of pride.
Right.
Right now. I mean, I'm ready. Yeah. Actually, I got a couple empty bottles. I can do a couple cracks of bottles on his head.
Yeah.
You
got the sushi knife back there.
Yeah, maybe this is culturally acceptable. Right. Now I don't know.
It's like the scene out of Kill Bill. Yeah. I know where this is going.
So after the guy leaves, he's like, don't let that, like, you know, hit you the wrong way. I was like, why? That doesn't make any sense. He threatened my family.
Right.
He's like, yeah, he's a Yakuza. So what do you give him a percentage of your income? What do you do? Like,
yeah,
he's an open tab, but I guess there's like a lot of like that dark industry within the industry over there. So I don't think I can ever own a restaurant in Japan just because I feel like I have to feed a percentage of my winnings.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
Something like that. The other ones that I have run into, I didn't have sort of that one-on-one confrontational. It seemed like they're doing whatever they're doing, and I'm doing whatever I'm doing, and it's just I'm not interfering with whatever kind of illegal racket or whatever whores they're trying to sell or whatever gambling ring they have. So they just it doesn't
affect you,
right? But
it's just so weird. It's just it's a weird way of politics. It works,
I guess. Yeah,
it works. I guess.
Yeah,
from what I grasp.
But yeah. So the other, I got another interesting story about the. I don't know if it's interesting. I have another story about the Yakuza.
Yeah.
This was the very first time I was in Japan. I was over there, went on this trip from Miami University. One of the professors, Stan Russell, ran like a Japan summer studio. So you go over there for 6 weeks and learn about Japanese architecture and everything. That's my first time out of the country.
Oh, cool.
First time in Japan. And we went to some beach near Osaka or Awaji Island or something like that. And there were these Yakuza. They were in their swimming trunks, but they had... I remember one of the guys had the koi tattooed all around his body, and they were all in their swimming trunks and had all these different, those really cool tattoos. But they had this giant truck that had jet skis on the back of it that they had obviously rented somewhere.
Yeah.
And they were trying to back it onto the beach, but there's this concrete wall that they had snagged the bumper of the truck on. And they didn't realize it because one was in the back, one was driving, and the bumper was down there. And so they were trying to back it out, and they're bending this bumper. And I'm like, hey, you know, and they kind of look at me, like, yeah, point at the bumper. Oh, yeah, okay. And so then they figured out that was loose, and the one guy tried to stomp it back in place. It didn't go, and then they were on their way.
Stop
it. He stopped it. It bent it a little bit, but I don't think he's going to get it. He's either not going to get his security deposit back, or he never had to put one down. Right, either way.
You just walk in. Yeah. That's why I'm like wondering if maybe I should just get a big tattoo and just go over there to see what kind of reaction I'm going to get. You know?
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that. Because I want a tattoo.
Mm.
Not like I want one, but I don't want one. Because like, I just see my mom, she's like, disown you.
Yeah.
Disown you. I'm like, but now I'm like, on my own. She can't really disown me.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's like, just on my leg, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
they won't let you in the onsens or the swimming pools.
Yeah.
When I was in Tokyo, I was staying at the Kodokan, which is the world headquarters for judo. And I was staying in the hostel there, and one day, one of the guys wanted to go to a public swimming pool.
Yeah.
And there was one, take the train here, take the bus there. But anyway, we got there. And one of the guys in our group had like a tattoo on his arm. So before we went in, he had to cover up this tattoo with a bandage.
Yeah.
And when we went through the line, they asked him what it was. And they said, oh, yes, he burned himself very bad and he had an infection. So I'm like, oh, yes, go ahead. So they'd rather have somebody with a festering wound in the swimming pool
right.
than a tattoo. It's not
yeah,
as good.
I got Ebola, but you know, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go in the pool, spread it.
It's got chlorine in it, it's fine. As long as you don't have any tattoos.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, so I don't know, it's one of those things, maybe I can't, or... Mm. I'll wear like scuba pants or something.
That's it.
Anyway,
so you came back to the U.S. and so how did Kaze get started?
Kaze was a project that I was in while I was in Japan doing my starting over, if you want to call it that, with sushi. I got an email from John. John's son, actually. He was like, we want you back. So I went on a visit to come back here in Cincinnati and just kind of pay my respects to all the places I worked. So I went to Baroka, I went to Embers, and I saw John, and he was like, you know, we're planning on coming back. And, you know, let me know, and we can open a new restaurant. Mm-hmm. So that's how that connection just started up again. And I was like a year later, I jumped back to the States, mm-hmm. or to Cincinnati, and that's when the started all the planning, and the space was picked out, made another trip previous to moving back when we started walking around spaces. So that was when...
Was it always over the Rhine is where you wanted to have it?
Yeah, I think it was just like the uprising. It was already starting. The Senate was already there. Abigail's, I think, was opening. Belgium was opening. I think there was like all these things already starting.
And it's been a huge change. I don't know when it was, maybe 20 years ago, that was deemed the worst neighborhood in America.
Yeah.
That was it. And it's been such a change. When I was going to grad school at Miami in 2004 and 5, you come down and there were a couple artists areas and little boutiques, but it was still kind of a dicey area. And now, not so much. Yeah. I mean, it's really turned around. It's really up and coming anymore. It's there.
It's so crazy. You know, I'm just waiting though. You know, it's, if you want to create a town, you need town things like a laundromat or something, a market. It's just saturating with restaurants right now. So we'll see.
It's more of a destination than a place that people live.
Right. And I think people that live there, that's what they want to kind of expect. They want more a feel for a town to come through. But I'm sure it'll happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's how the move from Japan to Cincinnati was decided, was the concept for Kaze. Just the timing of it all.
So, you know, what's the difference now that you're on the ownership, the management side? All these other places, even you said you worked at one in Montgomery where you were on the ground floor, but you weren't really the owner, you were still an employee. So what's the big difference? Or are there any differences?
The big difference is you really have to spread yourself a little more. Like, you can focus on, when it was Embers, I had to focus on the sushi and the people that were working with the sushi. Mm-hmm. Now my focus is, you know, everywhere. It's all, so like, it's really hard to not spread yourself too thin and kind of like, delegation is like huge. You know, that was like my hardest thing to get used to, was because I want to do everything by myself. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'll get to it. And then you realize you're not only not doing it, but then you're like only doing it half-assed. Mm-hmm. You find yourself like spreading yourself too thin.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that was the biggest challenge, is to come to grasp that, hey, you're only one person, put people in charge that you want them to be in charge, put them in that position and rely on them and hold them accountable. Mm. So that was awesome. That's helped me a lot. You know, we've been open 3 years.
Right.
It took me 2 years to figure this out. we've only opened for 2 years. We're on our third year.
Okay.
And it took me 2 years to figure this out.
Earlier this month.
Yeah, 2015. Okay. It's becoming the light for me to kind of...
That's good. So you're keeping the employees corralled? You're getting the people that do want to step up those positions?
And I feel like, you know, I'm... Just be fair. You know, it's just... The guys that are in the kitchen, I started as the head sushi chef because I was still in training with the current position I have. Misaki, he's been doing sushi for, I think, 10 years now, you know, and he's learning the ways that I do it with the fish and all the styles with Kaze is, he's learned. So now he's my guy. Like,
he can handle it.
Yeah. So now I can focus on, you know, the kitchen side a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it was hard to get to that point, but mm-hmm. now I can think, you know, I got bigger fish to fry, like the water heater's going down, so I got to call the, you know, it's like.
Yeah, the busboy can't do that, no matter how much he wants to step up, because yeah. you got to sign the check.
So it's yeah. crazy, it's just like, you know, now it's like maintenance stuff that I'm looking at, well, of which I've always been like doing, but now I'm looking at the small details of the restaurant and just keeping things working.
Very good. Well, it looks like it's going great, you know. I always like to stop in there every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a different part of town, but make the trip down there.
Hyde Park.
Yeah, it's not that far. Yeah, I should get down there more. All right. Well, hey, thanks for sitting down with me. Really appreciate it. Learned a lot of interesting stuff about sushi.
Yeah.
And we'll have to do it again.
Yeah, that was fun. That was my first podcast, so.
All right, it was my first podcast, too. It's just a 35th episode. All right.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks again to our guest, Hideki Harada, co-owner and executive chef of Kaze Japanese Pub in Cincinnati's Over the Rhine District. For more information on Kaze and this week's guest, visit the restaurant at 1400 Vine Street in Cincinnati. Go to www.kazeotr.com, KAZEOTR.com, or check out Kaze OTR on Facebook. Nihedibiru and Mataya. We'll see you next week. Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.